We're going to end this hour on a more basic notion of literacy. No pianos involved here, no reading of music or political literacy. That's for the 114th Congress to deal with. If you miss out on learning your colors at age two, can you catch up at three? If you're still missing the idea of the word because by age four, how does that set you back in kindergarten? What is the harm of not learning the word microgravity by first grade or grandiose by second grade? Once the brain has left the station of early childhood, gaps in vocabulary, educators are finding, are a huge hindrance to achieving equal educational outcomes in school and success in life. It's a big issue, and there are initiatives all around the country to try to intervene early. Sherry Levine is executive director of Literacy Inc., otherwise known as LINK. It's an organization that's trying to narrow the word gap in New York. Sherry, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.
Is there a real word gap, and can you chart where it occurs most harmfully?
Yes. So there's a real word gap, and it's most harmful for children who are living in poverty. There have been many, many studies done. The average child living in poverty hears 30 million words before they enter school, 30 million fewer words before they enter school. The average child living in poverty has 25 hours of an adult reading to them before they enter school versus 1,000 hours for a more middle-class child.
And poverty relates to this in the sense that there are fewer adults available to converse and work with kids if both parents are working, if there's a very stressed household economic environment.
Yes, and it's also cultural, and there are language barriers. Often immigrants think that if they don't speak English, that they're doing more harm to their child than good by speaking and reading to them in their native language, and that's simply not the case.
So you would not recommend speaking and learning in the native language?
We do, absolutely. Yes. It's not the case that it's harmful.
So
there's a misconception often in busy households where parents have other stresses of poverty that that they might be harming their child by speaking to them and interacting with them in their native language.
So the vocabulary benefit accrues in whatever language.
Absolutely.
It's really important to have the linguistic skills taking place at the earliest possible age.
Absolutely.
How does daycare contribute to this in the sense that early childhood experiences in daycare don't necessarily involve intensive vocabulary development?
Yeah. I mean, there are opportunities in neighborhoods, including in daycare and other settings. And that's what Literacy Inc. is all about, making sure that daycare workers, families, other adults who come in contact with child early know that it's important to talk to children, to share words, storytelling, family recipes. All of these things are opportunities to open up the future for children by increasing their vocabulary. They just don't always have the information.
A lot of groups like LINK are increasingly focused on early intervention, really preschool, getting at people in the 2, 3, 4-year-old ages. Is it the case that this word gap is more narrowable, more able to be addressed at this age, and it's too late later on?
Yes. So LINK focuses on preschool through third grade. Third grade is really the critical juncture because until third grade, children are taught to read. After third grade, you need to read in order to learn. And so all of the research shows that if a child does not read well on grade level by third grade, it's very, very hard to catch up. And there's a stat that if a child's not reading well by third grade and they're living in poverty, they're 16 times less likely to graduate from high school.
What are the word markers that indicate to you or the people who you use to evaluate families and communities that indicate that they may be on track, the kinds of conversations you would expect to hear in communities that are on track versus the kinds of conversations you would expect not to hear or differently hear?
There's not one particular set of vocabulary or words. It's simply the volume and the environment. LINK works with families in the home, in the community, and in the school to create an environment where there's more reading, more talking, more literacy activities. And so it's the entire environment, not just a particular set of words or vocabulary.
How do parents react to these programs?
Every parent wants their child to succeed. they just don't always understand the role that they can play. And so parents react very positively when we let them know that they have the tools and the skills to help their child, and they play a very important role. The key in every LINK community is we have a community coordinator who is from that community, who speaks the language, who lives in the neighborhood, who establishes trusting relationships with the families in the neighborhood. And she gives them simple tools that they can use at home and creates opportunities in the neighborhood for families to feel comfortable and feel confident and empowered that they can help their children.
You know, so many social advocacy groups we talk about on this program are adopting this model of a person in the neighborhood who's kind of a coach, coordinator, someone who really talks the talk from community household table to table. Mm-hmm. You found that this is really working here.
Absolutely.
And we've seen it in particular schools where there are individuals, and right here in New York, where coaches go into schools and find the individuals who are, close to dropping out and help them in that sort of last mile. How do you help parents within the community to connect to a program that then becomes sustainable at their own dinner table or at bedtime?
We have two programs for parents. One are basic parenting workshops, where we talk to parents about things that they can do to help their own child. One of our most successful programs is a very involved parent academy, where we have identified parents who are very excited and share what they've done with their own child, and we train them to become advocates in their community and create simple reading events that other families can attend. So they'll have reading in their building lobbies and housing projects. They'll do reading in laundromats, reading in fast food restaurants, reading in the parks when weather permits. And it's this peer-to-peer, parent-to-parent social network that develops and really drives a culture of literacy where none existed before.
Do the schools see the benefit of this in the incoming students? And can they distinguish between students from your programs and people who have not had this kind of attention?
Yes. We work on a continuum, and we continue to help the families once they get in school. So we do have partnerships with the schools, and we know that the schools can see the benefits not only of having parents understand what they can do, but for children to have other opportunities outside of the school building where they're reading and being read to, and their confidence grows and their vocabulary grows and their ability to read aloud, and all of those skills are enhanced.
Tangible educational and social benefits, one word at a time. Sherry Levine, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Sherry Levine is the executive director of Literacy, Inc., an organization that's fighting to narrow the word gap right here in New York City.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.